I will now read an excerpt from the July 2015 sermon based on the third UU principle written by Mary Gail Harrison of the Unitarian Society of Hartford, entitled, Mary, Mary, How Does Our Spiritual Garden Grow? Which quoted Dr. Robert Lanza, an eminent cellular biologist and author, who said, the further we peer into space, the more we realize that the nature of the universe cannot be understood fully by inspecting spiral galaxies or watching distant supernovas. It lies deeper. It involves our very selves. Mary Harrison continues, encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregation involves our very selves, and obviously so does acceptance of one another. What's new in religion, therefore, may not be expanding information about what we can objectively observe, as in cosmology or neuroscience, but rather the expanding subjective understanding of our inner selves with which we live all the time. The subjective spiritual growth, cutting edge, however, is not to allow ourselves to become stuck in our comfort zones, locked into familiar patterns, closed in with our blind spots, repeating cliches, defending what we have always been, making excuses when we have acted inexcusably. We have to grow our spiritual garden.
During the next 15 minutes or so, I'll be presenting information from a couple of sources. As background, we'll be reviewing findings from an Angus Reid survey on Canadians' involvement with religious organizations. Statistics that were discussed fully in a March 2015 McLean's article by Aaron Hutchins. This is the latest poll for this type of information. After that, I'll read excerpts from a rather edgy July 2012 blog entitled, Growing Up May Be the Only Thing That Leads to Growth, written by an American UU minister who posts under the name Peace Bank. Both of these articles contain lots of food for thought. I'm only sharing highlights with the hopes that there will be opportunity later for a few comments as to the relevance of these excerpts for this congregation. And I will, in the constraints of a PowerPoint kind of presentation worship service, I've had to do an extreme amount of extracting, but I have been very true to the author's words. So the words you're hearing are not mine, but the authors of these references. So first, what's happening with religion in Canada? Religion in Canada isn't declining as fast as we think. Some religious groups have grown, particularly those attracting immigrants. Numbers of evangelicals have increased in step with Canada's population. Same holds true for Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists, and Sikhs. Catholics are building new churches in some regions, whereas both the Anglican and United Church of Canada have experienced steady decline. We'll take a minute to look at the graph. For those, the details are a bit hard to see, I know if you're in the back of the room. On the horizontal axis, we have percentage who attend religious services. We're tracking it with this bar graph, monthly plus attendance. So people who attended at least once a month and more. And this survey encompassed 3,041 Canadians. It was done in early 2015. On the vertical axis, we have age range, 18 to 34 at the top, 35 to 54 in the middle, and people 55 and older on the near the horizontal axis. Black bars are people born in Canada. Purple bars are people born outside of Canada. Conclusion is, For the Canadian-born, religion is an older person's game, not so for immigrants. Moving on to the next statistical slide, we'll look at the figure first. This one is tracking inclination to embrace religion. Again, the vertical axis is age range, same categories, 18 to 34, 35 to 54, and 55 and older at the lower end, at the base. And it's the percentage who embrace religion. And by that, they actually survey people's views. Were they religiously inclined, interested in that type of thing, or not at all? And they had different categories. Again, born in Canada is the black bar. Born outside of Canada is the purple bar. Now, the interesting thing about these, you can see, it's very clear. The immigrants there's much higher interest in the embrace religion, much more than Canadian people who were born in Canada. They're both Canadian people who were born in Canada. Not so with the older population. The older population, the interest level is about the same. So, 40% of newcomers are more inclined to embrace religion than their Canadian-born, where the stat is more like 29%. Immigrants are more frequently to attend religious services and are more likely to go as a family unit than Canadian-born. They also have bigger families, generally, than Canadian-born. Canadians, people born in Canada, aren't having such large families oftentimes. 67% of Canada's population growth now comes from migratory increase. That's what it was in 2015. This is projected to reach 80% by 2031. So the conclusion, I love this line directly from the article, religion in Canada has found its saviors. It's the immigrants. And I will say another factor I'll just share is that in the 20th century, you know, who came to Canada was generally from Europe, a lot of people from Europe and Great Britain. Now, our major immigrants are people from Africa, people from Asia, the Middle East, and the Philippines. So, another conclusion was that the face of religion in Canada will be largely determined by the countries who are providing our immigrants. So, I thought that was, you know, something that we need to keep in mind. So now moving on to this blog by Peace Bank. Growing up may be the only thing that leads to growth. So on the internet, in preparing for this service, the thought going into it was that we would find a sermon online, a YouTube sermon online, and deliver that, and, on growth, and kind of just free up a little time for Reverend Warren. And this comes up right away, so it's a frequently hit article. It's fairly long and a lot of detail in it. Some of it's quite edgy and controversial. If you're curious, you might want to go. Some of it's harsh, and I wouldn't say it here, but anyways. So what Peace Bang is exploring is, what assumptions do we make when newcomers join us on Sunday morning? We assume people visit us because they are interested in joining a church and hope they will want to join ours. He calls that a pure fantasy. By and large, people don't come to church for that reason. One exception is oftentimes people with children who are asking difficult questions, and these parents need support in helping their children explore this. So these people often do want to join the church, and they want it for their children. People do not attend a worship service because they're interested in joining a church, but because they're looking for something deep. They're seeking, searching, and in need. What do they need? They need to experience something that confirms the thing they've been struggling with alone. This typically has something to do with being sick and tired of navigating life by themselves with only their own opinions and thoughts to guide them. Being ready to get over themselves and drawn into a greater, more profound version of life. It has to do with being vulnerable. What happens when seekers show up? What do we give them? Friendly queries over coffee hour, nice chit chat. Stacks of pamphlets, invitations to help with the next bank sale. Peace Bank's words. I was tempted to say yard sale, but Peace Bank's words. Comment there was, conveying good community spirit may be a selling point for some people, but not many. A hearty offering of social events, smelling people, some pretty good preaching, a decent Sunday school, are no longer all that's needed to keep visitors coming back. When UU congregations believe their social justice identity will be a major drawing point for newcomers, they are barking up the wrong tree. People may be drawn in by opportunities to participate in community justice initiatives, but that doesn't mean they have an accompanying need to join a spiritual community. Passionate activists with no particular spiritual quality or identity can be found in dozens of organizations. What do Sunday service visitors want? They want an experience that confirms their longing for a deeper life. They want an experience that connects them with people asking themselves and each other big and serious questions. They want to feel touched and awakened as spiritual beings. They want to feel that they are among deep and reverent people that take the project of life seriously. What are seekers looking for? They're looking for a community of people who ponder and discuss time-honored theological questions. A community of people who are more attentive than the usual coffee shop crowd. A community of people who are friendly, funny, helpful, fun, and loving. They're looking for evidence. This is a big one. They're looking for evidence that the gathering place they're in is important to its members. And they're looking for evidence of one people with a common desire to live deeply in the common ethic of service, learning, and love. Many pages in between. UUs and other religious liberals need to question their assumptions and learn to listen. Ask different kinds of questions than are asked anywhere else. They need to, each of us, need, he says, UUs and other religious liberals need to see every new person as an opportunity to examine their own depth of and maturity level. Asking questions of ourselves, like, am I offering shallow welcomes? What do I have to say about my own spiritual practices that might speak to this person? Do I even have any spiritual practices that hold me accountable to the values we profess to hold here? If not, why not? What else are we here for? The concluding in bold text statement of this blog post was, if today's seekers do not immediately experience a church community as a group of people who take spiritual questions seriously, they will not return. How sad we have come to look at spiritual seekers in demographic terms or as potential pledges. Do we now understand the connection between the shallowness of our vision and practices and our terrible record of visitor retention?